And today we have guests from the East Bonner County Library, Executive Director Vanessa Velez and Joyce Jowdy, Community Engagement Adult Programming Coordinator. We'll be talking about the recent completed strategic plan and events at the library. So welcome, Vanessa.
Morning.
Hi there.
Yeah.
And Joyce. Mm-hmm.
Okay, on to today's talk. And again, we have with us the East Bonner County Library Executive Director, Vanessa Velez, and Joyce Jowdy. She's the Community Engagement and Adult Programming Coordinator. Thank you both for being here. Vanessa, this is kind of your coming out party here on the on the radio, at least. You've been in your position for just about 6 months now. So for folks that aren't acquainted with you, give us a bit of your background.
Okay. Try not to go too far back. I've been officially director for, like you said, about 6 months. I was interim for about a year before that, interim director. I've worked at the library district since I moved here in 2006, so I'm coming up on my 19th year, and I've done pretty much every job there is to have at the library. I started just as an entry-level, you know, library page, worked the service desks, and then hopscotched around a bunch of different departments until, finally landing where I am. I'm originally from northeastern Washington, so not really too far, even though the town I'm from is really, really tiny. So Sandpoint feels like a big city.
What town is that? We might know it.
Well, it's called Northport. It's
I lived in Onion Creek.
So. Oh, awesome. Yeah, okay. I'm always surprised when people know it, but I shouldn't be surprised that people around here know it because it is a border crossing town. So got two right next door to the town. And I guess that's probably most well known for being the first American town on the Columbia River. So the Great Columbia.
Is it big enough to have a school?
It does have a school. I graduated with about 20 other kids. And so, Sandpoint feels like a big city to me.
And you had a library.
We did have a little library. Yeah, it was growing up, it was teeny tiny. And I'm not 100% sure that the library in Northport existed because the whole area around there is part of the Stevens County Rural Library District system. So we always went to the one in Colville, which I think is probably still in the same location, just a little house, someone's old house. And then the one in Northport is now in another tiny house, which is right next door to my mom's place, conveniently. She can poach Wi-Fi every now and then. But otherwise, it's a little different from our library. No, they let you. It's free access. Oh, they're not hiding it.
Okay. Well, great. Joyce, you've been on the radio many times, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But give us the quick rundown on your position at the library.
Well, I'm the Community Engagement Adult Programming Coordinator, and the Adult Programming Coordinator, you guys have heard me many times about the different programs we have going on, and the community engagement is really about trying to engage the community with the library and the library with the community, and trying to match up people's interests of what they want their community to be like, and trying to make sure we've got the access to the services and all that sort of thing. So, and working with everybody else, you know, in the extended services department and the other departments in the, you know, just kind of trying to bring everybody together. So, and I should mention, you know, many of you don't know some of, you know, Vanessa is so shy about her background. She's traveled, you know, she came from a little town, but she traveled and spent a long time in other countries and is very fluent in languages that some of us wish we were.
¿Y qué lenguas?
Español y francés.
Great. It's the rare thing for the American to be bilingual or trilingual, maybe. So Susie,
I would
jump
like
in.
To just say I've been looking over the strategic plan. Let's just move on to that. It seems like it was a really big project, and it's a 3-year from 2025 to 2028.
Yeah.
And looking at how did it unfold? How much time did it take to come up with such a comprehensive plan that really has the full scope of what our community and what the library can offer?
Yeah, well, this plan had some stops and starts because it was, and that's part of the reason that it's sort of a shorter time frame, because a lot of the research done for this plan is about 2 years old at this point, because the previous director, who left, I guess it'd be close to 18 months now, he'd started the process, and so he had a certain vision for how he wanted it to go, and was very different from the process that we'd used to write the previous strategic plan, which I had actually done as part of my capstone project for my library science degree. So it was that previous plan was a much more like traditional academic approach, and this plan, the initial research was based on the Harwood Institute's community conversations model, which the Harwood Institute works with organizations like libraries and municipalities like cities and county governments for strategic planning and other research. But they tend to start with questions that are much more generalized, whereas most libraries would start with questions that are very specific to the library and library services. So this took more of a community-first approach. So it was a different way of approaching this research. But it was interesting. But the reason it took so long is because there was a lot of upheaval in who was actually managing the process and how it was supposed to happen. So
who ultimately was kind of the ad hoc committee of individuals?
Yeah, and then and Joyce ended up being on the committee. And along the way, a couple of people who were on the committee, staff people, you know, moved on to other things. So we had to bring new people into the fold. And that just kind of morphed over a couple of years. But eventually we got together and we got it done.
Mm-hmm. And the research that you mentioned, it involved interviewing staff and patrons. And there was also a written survey that went out via mail and email.
Yeah, we got a lot. We got about over 600 responses on that survey. So that was part of the questioning process. But the other aspect were the community conversations. We asked the same questions, but the community conversations were set up more as a back and forth, so people could kind of add on to what other people were saying and have a little bit more interaction, whereas, of course, the survey was just sending out the questions and then getting the responses. There wasn't that back and forth aspect.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to want to talk about the 6 specific goals that it spells out. Mm-hmm. But in that survey process, which was fairly extensive, it was interesting to note, and this is in the plan, that the most frequently mentioned community aspiration was to have a connected community.
And how did that kind of, because connected community, I mean, we'll probably talk about it, as Chris says, in the points, but
I think a lot of this actually did come out because the community was sort of recovering from the COVID isolation and the lack of, you know, group activities, that everything had to be sort of curtailed during that time period. So I think a lot of people were missing that, but some of these things were stated really clearly in like the community conversations. You know, you could just pull out these statements, and as soon as people seconded that or added on to it, you just sort of amplified it, like, oh, okay, oh, that person mentioned connectivity is an important point for them too. And in the survey responses, you had to went through and coded all the responses. So this is just a social science thing I'm not going to get into, but you go through the responses and you start picking out keywords essentially and marking how many times these certain phrases or words are mentioned. And that word cloud on page 4 is an example. It's like how many times these phrases were highlighted, and it just showed the importance of having a connected community, of having sort of a neighborly feeling in your environment, and mm-hmm. that came out really strongly.
Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, the most frequently mentioned concerns were polarization mm-hmm. and safety.
Yeah. So essentially the opposite of the connectivity, that polarization, feeling like mm-hmm. people are sort of retreating into their separate camps. Again, keeping in mind that I think COVID was still in, you know, in people's minds at this point. We had a big hangover effect
from COVID at that point, and there was a lot of polarization.
Yeah, and I honestly think that I think we would get a different batch of responses, but I do think that the main concerns probably haven't changed. I mean, people still do want to live in a safe, connected community. I think that's pretty universal. From what I understood of the Harwood Institute's approach, not having gone through their full training, is they focus on finding the commonalities between people, between community members. And so getting people from different walks of life, different, you know, political, religious backgrounds, whatever might end up polarizing people, getting them to come together and understand that we want the same things when it comes down to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, the plan sets out 6 specific strategic priorities, goals, and values. And I guess why don't we just kind of run through these 6?
Yeah.
So I'll rattle off the 6 and then let's come back and talk a little bit about each one. So the first is to inform and involve the community.
Mm-hmm.
The second is to expand community accessibility. The third is to foster a welcoming environment. The fourth is to expand our reach beyond library walls. The fifth is to facilitate opportunities for enrichment and connection. And the 6th is to develop practices to support staff and foster wellness. And in each one of these is elaborated on in the plan. So let's start with that first one. I don't know if these are arranged in order priority.
No, we deliberately didn't want to put them in numbered order to not make it seem like anyone was more important than another.
Well, so strategic priority, first one listed there was inform and involve the community.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us, you know, how you see the library, as you spelled out here in the plan.
Yeah.
Going to engage with that.
Yeah, so that actually came out from people also commenting on when you ask people about general feelings about the community, a lot of the comments were not specifically about the library, which of course is to be expected when you're not asking a question that's specifically about the library. So part of the background for that priority was people wishing they had more say in local decisions, like on a county or city governance level as well. And so the library's job there was seeing how can the library then help support that as a community stated goal. So part of that, of course, is increasing awareness of library services, but also a big part of that is the local resources, just amplifying local voices. And I'm glad you mentioned the CREC, the Community Resource and Vision Center mixer, because that's another really important resource in our community. But so the library, we don't want to reinvent the wheel. You know, if another organization or group is already doing something well, all we want to do is amplify what they're doing and increase the opportunity for people to connect with the resources that these groups or people are providing. And then the other aspect of that is gathering this community information. So having accessible pathways for community members to share their input.
When you talk about amplifying local resources that are in kind of coordination with the library's mission, down in Spokane, just an anecdotal bit of information, the library in downtown Spokane hosts and houses their community radio station, KYRS.
Oh, yeah.
So, and because they have similar missions, it's the voice of your community.
Yeah, so that's very cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and folks will need to get the plan, which is available on the website.
Yes.
It says get all the details here, but I like the way it's presented in as the goals. We will, and there's 4 bullet points, and then what you may see, which tells what the intended effect of trying to achieve those goals would be.
Yeah.
One of them, as under what you may see, is a more community conversation style events.
Yep.
So. That's probably right down Joyce's.
Yeah, that was something when people were doing the community conversations during the research phase, a lot of people mentioned just enjoying that format and wishing that they could have that more, not necessarily even in context of the library specifically, but on like with the city or, you know, local government or just local agencies and organizations. I think people just liked that sort of facilitated roundtable format. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of those, Joyce is really making headway on one of those goals already, the encourage community co-creation of library programs and services. The curious conversations that we'll be talking about later is that was a fully community co-created program. Mm-hmm. So we're already making headway there.
Mm-hmm. And that's an event that's coming up March 14th. We'll circle back on that one.
So just real quick, one of the We Wills, the goals or what you'll be doing is gathering community information and soliciting feedback. You probably have a way of doing that on a regular basis?
We do. On a very casual level, we have contact us forms that people aren't shy about using. So we just have more drop-off, I guess I would say, sort of passive methods, whereas the a community conversations would be more interactive. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, let's take a look at the second strategic priority that's listed here, and that's expand community accessibility. So tell us about that.
Well, a lot of that had to do with, we have all these fantastic services. For example, I'll just use digital services as an example. And often people may have barriers for coming into the library physically for whatever reason. Well, just the fact that our county is kind of spread out and it can take a while, especially in the winter. But not everyone has good internet connectivity at their house. And so the library was recently the recipient of a grant to bring a digital navigator program into the community. And that might be held up with the general upheaval at the federal level, but we're still hoping that that will come through. And part of that is to help people understand how they can get resources to get connectivity at their house if they, because there's a lot of rural households that qualify for grants and I can't think of what the word is, but essentially just assistance to get connectivity or even devices at their homes. And for the library, that's important because that's one way that they can actually get all these free services, but without that connectivity, they can't get it. And the other aspect is also, how can we allow all members of the community to use library services in a convenient way? So the picture here is an adaptive keyboard. So we had a low vision patron actually bring this up to us, and it was such an easy thing to do that we purchased one and made it available. And now this daily patron can use our computers without the visual barrier that he had before. So mm-hmm. that's just one person, but it translates.
And when you mentioned digital navigators, those are individuals.
Yeah, that would be an individual hired to assist people with learning their devices and also assist people with navigating the environment of qualifying for these grants and assistance.
And just to let folks know, too, that CREC, the Community and Vision Center, currently does have a person through AmeriCorps doing digital navigating assistance.
Perfect, yep.
So while we're not there yet, feel free to call the Envision Center and hook up with their person. I think he's got a few more months of providing assistance for that type of thing that Vanessa just explained, how to use your devices mm-hmm. and problem solve.
One of the ways that you talk about expanding community accessibility is things, library pop-ups at community events and local care centers.
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember at the bridge when my mom was there, someone would come around with books.
Yes.
And or ask you ahead of time what books you'd like to read.
Yes.
So
yeah.
How does that?
Yeah, we have a homebound outreach program that also goes to the long-term care centers, but some of those things might just be fun events, like we've brought the mobile virtual reality program to local care centers, and that's just a fun way to interact with the residents and provide a new, just something fun to do for the day that goes beyond just bringing books.
So you have an employee that...
Yeah, we have
outreach.
Kim Bevers runs our homebound outreach program, and Brendan Bobby will bring the VR equipment out to places that can mm-hmm. that can handle the setup.
Nice.
Okay, that's expanding community accessibility. Third strategic priority is fostering a welcoming environment. So tell us about that.
That was something that came out in the research. Another frequently mentioned goal for the community, goal is not the right word, desire, I guess, for the community was that it be welcoming. So thinking about how the library can do that is just emphasizing that the library provides services for everyone, and that really means for everyone. That's not just the majority of people, but literally everyone.
So all age groups.
All age groups, all walks of life, mm-hmm. all accessibility levels. And if we're not doing something well, we do want to hear about it. So if one of our resources or services is hard to use, definitely we want to learn about that. But also, again, going back to the amplifying the voices of if there's something we can't provide, but there's another group or agency or individual in town who can, making those connections and allowing people to access those resources within the community.
Mm-hmm. One product of this priority is that what we may see is that updates that promote different zones in the library.
Mm-hmm.
Zones being like different collections of books or?
More like usage, because we, you know, the library traditionally for, well, decades, I guess I would say centuries, was kind of known as a very, as a shushy place, right? You have the stereotype of the librarian literally just shushing people.
They still whisper, by the way.
Yeah, well, and I think
and that's good, Chris.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of people do welcome a quieter environment, but feedback over the years has been that people feel a bit unwelcome if they're aggressively shushed just for talking at a normal volume. And so, but we tried to, so that's what we kind of mean by zones, where we have areas that we allow just normal conversation volume, but then other areas that are still designated as quiet. So like half of the upstairs is designated as a quiet reading area, because some people really value being able to just sit in that quiet environment, whether or not you're reading or studying or, you know, whatever you're doing, and just sort of having that be clearly delineated so that people understand the expectations in different areas of the library.
A big shush sign.
Yeah.
And then on that same note, there's that teen lounge.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So that gives a different environment
for
teens.
And that's not a quiet place.
Right.
Yeah. And for them to... But that's actually a separated room, too, so that helps.
Right. Yeah. And for a space now for the VR and for the virtual reality and the STEM programming and stuff like that. So once again, when there's a hands-on interaction or social component where you're not disturbing the rest of the library, those kinds of things are awesome. And also our Karen's room for story time.
Right.
You know, so those kids enjoying story time don't affect, you know, other kids trying to do other things quietly.
Yeah.
Having the extra space is essential and really helpful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's that third one, fostering a welcome environment. And for the record, I've always felt welcome.
Good.
The fourth is expand our reach beyond the library walls. So discuss that one.
Yeah. So this is something we've actually been doing a little more over the past couple of years. And part of this we can, I don't want to say necessarily thank COVID for, but getting the library to do things outdoors was a big part of that. You know, people felt more comfortable gathering in outdoor spaces. So having library programs that are literally just outside the walls, but also meeting people where they are was, we found that a barrier to some library services was, well, oh, I love this program or the idea of this program, but I can't make it on Friday at 3 p.m. or, you know, whatever time we had this program. And so actually going to the places where people already gather and having us be more of a presence in community in community spaces like the farmer's market. You know, we started bringing the bookmobile to the farmer's market. That's just one example, and also helps remind people that the library is here, because the library gets very heavily used at certain times in people's lives, and then there's sort of a drop off in usage. And like when people have kids, they bring their kids in a lot, and then when people get older, maybe fixed incomes, they come back to the library because, you know, figured out, oh, I can save a ton of money borrowing these books versus buying them. But there's sort of a gap in between, and trying to reach some of that gap and just reminding people, hey, we're still here. You can still save a ton of money borrowing these resources, and making connections with people, and maybe just make friends.
Just a reminder to our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY, and this is The Morning Show with Chris and Susie. And this is a time to remind our listeners that this is a listener-supported community radio station. So what would you say about that, Chris?
Today, if you would like to make a donation and help keep us on the air, you can give us a call, 265-2992, or you can go to our website, krfy.org, and make a donation there. And, of course, we really appreciate it.
We are commercial and free and independent and nonprofit. So thanks for listening. And today we're talking with Vanessa Velez and Joyce Jowdy from the East Bonner County Library. Currently, we're talking about their strategic plan. It's amazing. It's really good. And we love our library, by the way. I just have to throw that out there. We're so fortunate. So
that's
continuing
what we like to
on.
Hear.
Yeah, truly. I live about 3 blocks away, so it's
perfect.
Really cool.
Okay, so we were talking about a fourth strategic priority to expand the library's reach beyond the library walls. And one of the what you may see bullet points here is library-hosted nature walks. And you guys have already been doing some of that, I think. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a picture on that page. I think that's from the mushroom foraging.
Yeah, that was from the mushroom class up at Trestle Creek.
Yeah, that was a good one.
We had a phenomenal attendance. Mm-hmm. People wanting to learn how to identify mushrooms and such forth and how to use them, very, very well attended. And then also the children's program has been doing Tales to Trails or Trails to Tales. I always get that inverted.
Yeah.
over at Pine Street Woods. And I think they're going to probably do that again this year.
Yeah.
So a lot of interest in, you know, we live in such a wonderful outdoor place. Everybody wants to be outside. And sometimes that's why people don't come to the library. It's like, who wants to be inside on
right.
a beautiful day?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean they don't want to learn something new or experience something different. And that's one of the real contributing factors to just get out there. And library really is for everybody, regardless of whether you want to come in or you want to do digital or whether you want to do it on your favorite hike and share mm-hmm. it with others.
Mm-hmm. And we have this garden program. I think that fits into this area,
yeah,
which
absolutely.
Is kind of different. I love it. It's so beautiful. And you use the space well.
Yeah, and it amazes me. People still don't realize it's there, even people who go to the library. So it's right next to the parking lot, folks. And it is a demonstration garden that Kelly and Anna and all the different coordinators over the past few years have put so much effort into. Pollinator garden, we've got herbs, we've got all different things to illustrate some of the principles. And then we're trying to do classes out there in the summer so people can get a hands-on experience as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of a hidden part of the library. It's right there on site. But if you haven't actually checked it out, go take a walk around it. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, let's talk about the fifth listed strategic priority. That's facilitate opportunities for enrichment and connection. And a lot of opportunities for that, I suppose. But Vanessa, tell us more.
Yeah, so I have to throw out the little Idaho Easter egg on that. We have the learning is perpetual sort of catchphrase there. The idea there was to throw the Esto Perpetua Idaho seal on there, but it didn't really fit in with the general design plan, but that is why that one catchphrase is maybe a little awkward, but we decided to keep it in there for the Idaho peeps. And this is something that the library has always been a part of. And we didn't want to just say, education, because that can be viewed in very formal ways and people can learn throughout their lives. You know, a huge part of library service has always been literacy, of course, right? That's really a linchpin, and that starts very young, but can also go through into adulthood. And we have adults with low literacy taking advantage of our volunteer tutors in the Lifelong Learning Center. And that's something we've always been doing. But a lot of what we're doing with the different modalities of programming that we're offering recognizes that people learn in different ways, and not just from reading a book or listening to a lecture, but just being hands-on and often learning directly from others. So a lot of the programs we're doing not only have DIY or hands-on components, but also just allow community members to make connections with each other. Like the mushroom foraging program that Joyce described earlier, that program had great attendance, but also attendees made connections with each other and made plans to go on foraging trips amongst themselves afterwards. So it kind of took on a life of its own and just spurred by that initial program. So that's a big part of what we're trying to achieve there.
Mm-hmm. And you have tutoring programs already, right?
Yes.
Yeah. For both kids, but also adults.
All ages. Yeah. Yeah. We have, we always have a need for more volunteer tutors. That's almost exclusively volunteer run. The one paid position is the Lifelong Learning Center coordinator. That's Frank Fodoraro, and he does a great job facilitating the connections between the volunteers and matching them up with the learners, the right person to the right. You get the right pair, and they can really make strides together. But, yeah, well, it'll be kids learning, literally learning to read or getting a little bit of extra assistance with math or language arts later, especially the middle school age seems to need some assistance, but also adults learning other languages or taking citizenship classes. We've had multiple people go through our programs, either learning English or also studying for the civics portion of the citizenship tests. And yeah, we also have remote tutoring. So we have a document reader. I'm not even sure what it's called, but the ability to do like even Zoom tutoring. So, and proctor tests. So people just doing remote classes on their own time can come in and get their tests proctored, because a lot of universities require that the testing be done in a locked environment, so you know people can't cheat. Mm-hmm. So we do that too.
Okay. Well, that is facilitating opportunities for enrichment and connection, aka education. I use that word.
Yeah, learning.
Learning, yes.
Yeah. Well, that learning, like you were saying, is at any age. I mean, one of the things, I think we were a little surprised, we offered one of the volunteers that she was referencing, decided to offer, speak Spanish as his first language and wanted to share. And wasn't sure how to, you know, do it. Was it going to be meetings or what? And he decided to do Spanish for Travelers. And, you know, thought we'd get a few people. We got 36 people. Mm-hmm. So then we started splitting it out into two classes. Then it got complicated. And now it's a beginning for Spanish, Spanish for beginners class weekly, you know, and it's already sold out and it hasn't started yet. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, they're in those are
need.
And those all are adults and teens. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think they're all adults by coincidence, but teens were welcome as well. And so all ages, everybody's
so
welcome.
So if folks are curious about the programs currently being offered, check the website.
Yes.
At ebonnerlibrary.org.
Yes.
And you can either go through the events page and click on the date of your interest, or you go to the top bar where there's the audiences and pull down the audience you're interested in, whether it's youth, teens, or adults. Click on that. And if you scroll down, you'll see upcoming events if you'd like to see a more listed way. And then also, if you have specific questions about any of those programmings, you can always call me or just the general library number, which is 208-263-6930 is our main number. And then my extension is 1103 if you need me specifically.
Going through and thinking about the programs you're offering, you're doing that because you see someone says they would like that, or yes, there's someone that can provide that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a perfect thing for a library to do.
Yeah.
Pay attention to the needs.
Yeah.
And the wants.
Connections right there. Okay. The sixth priority, that's the last one in the plan, is to develop practices to support staff and foster wellness. So tell us your goals with that one.
Yeah. This is probably the one priority that didn't directly come from the data that we gathered from the community, because as lovely as our community is, most people don't think to promote the staff when they're talking about what they want from the library. But we've seen over the years that it's incredibly important to not only ensure that we're paying a livable wage to, you know, not only attract good talent in the beginning, but then to retain it, but to also just allow people to have a healthy work-life balance and grow within the library. We've always emphasized promoting from within, but unless you allow people to take advantage of professional development opportunities, work in other departments, try new things, they won't always be well situated to move up within the library organization. So that was really important to us. And also, it's kind of a no-brainer, but you know, the what you may see, happier staff. Kind of silly, but not silly. I mean, I always say happy staff, happy patrons. people consistently provide positive feedback to us for the helpfulness and friendliness of our staff. And I think without there being a background of a staff person feeling supported and secure at their workplace, that isn't going to come out. And so it's just a win-win for everyone. If you support your staff, I think that translates to the service they're, you know, everyone's going to provide. So
happy staff, happy patrons.
Happy staff, happy patrons.
So again, folks can see the entire document at the website, ebonnerlibrary.org. And you do have some printed copies available, I guess.
Yeah, we only printed about 100 copies. Speaking of community partnerships, Selkirk Press printed this very nice booklet for us. Yes, if you want printed copies, please just let us know. We'll have a few available for handout, but we wanted to, you know, save some trees and encourage everyone to start on the website because it's all there too. Mm-hmm.
So it's must feel pretty good to have this project done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of exciting.
Yeah. It was everybody. Really nice to get it done, but also it was immediately on to the next thing the day after.
I'm sure identifying who does what, when, where,
yeah,
and continue.
Yeah, now we're on the implementation.
Right. And just to say congratulations on a really well done strategic plan.
Thank you.
It's a big deal and it takes a lot of energy, but it will support the work that you have committed to and our community in general, because we get to use the library.
That is the
these
goal.
Great programs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. And speaking of great programs, you have one coming up March 14th. It's called Curious Conversations. And Joyce, tell us about that one.
Well, it's essentially, instead of checking out a book, you'll check out a person. So, which we're calling a living book. Mm. And so it's an event starting at 6 p.m. You'll come, you'll sign up for a living book, and we have all sorts of different titles. And you'll get to have a one-on-one conversation with a living book. They'll share about something from their personal life, their story, what it's like to be them, what have you. It all varies. And then you'll have the opportunity to dialogue with them and ask questions and such forth. And then while that is going on, simultaneously, we'll also be gathering just as a community over hors d'oeuvres and probably some mocktails. We're still working out the refreshment angle and having some curated conversations, essentially some opportunities with talking prompts, conversational prompts. So instead of us wallflower shy people hanging against the walls at an awkward social cocktail party, we'll be all gathering together and having meaningful conversations and getting to know each other. Because this event is, you know, was spurred by members of our community, came to me saying, hey, we want to do something like this. We got people with fascinating stories in our community, and we want to hear who's what. Maybe we can relate to them, or maybe we'll see what it's like to be totally different than us, or what have you. You know, and just to give you a little teaser of a couple of the titles, Playful Parenting, Reconnecting with My Inner Kid. We have Articulated Hope, Escaping a Cult, Family Caregiving, The Often Unexpected, Seldom Wanted Gift, Surviving to Thriving, Leaving Trauma Behind. And then we've got some other humorous ones, some serious ones, all sorts of different topics. And it's an opportunity for us to know our neighbors and get to the end. If you listen to while you were gone on vacation, if you listen to the show, we even had somebody do a little mock story to give people a taste. So you can always go back into the podcast. So anyhow, I encourage you folks, please come out 6 to 9 p.m. Friday, March 14th. And it's after hours. You get to be in the library when nobody else can be. And we should really have a fun event.
Just a quick question. Mm-hmm. How long do you spend with each book, or do you, with that book for the
each evening? Living book.
With each living book, you're about 15 minutes.
Right. And then you'd move to another book.
Another book, or out to the lobby to have those other conversations with other attendees.
Yeah. Okay.
So it should be really fascinating, and we're excited. And if it's successful, we're going to bring it back on a more regular basis.
Yeah, Susie, you could be a living book.
What would I talk about? Joining a rock and roll band in my youth?
There you go.
It didn't happen. I'm just kidding.
Wow. Well, maybe somebody who did join a rock and roll band in their youth can come and you can check them
and
out.
And actually, there was somebody that was thinking about doing that as part of our thing. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then there's a ton of things always going on, but we wanted to talk about natural connections coming up Saturday, March 29th. And Joyce, take it away.
Okay, so this one turned out into a bit of a cultural day almost, if you will. I had a gentleman local who wanted to share his experience about the Camino de Santiago in Spain and his pilgrimage walks. He's written a couple of books, and he's done the pilgrimage walk a few times, and so he wants to share experiences of that at 10 a.m. on Saturday, March 29th. And then at 11:30, we have a local woman, someone will remember from last year, who brings folks from Japan. She's Japanese herself, but has lived here about 10 years. And she'll bring people from Japan to help them use their skills of English. And she believes in learning in the environment of which you're trying to speak the language of, that instead of just the classroom. And so she's bringing two students to share calligraphy, Japanese calligraphy. We'll get to see how it's done and also try it out ourselves, as well as another student will be sharing about the history of ninja, and we'll be able to make some of the implements used by ninja only out of origami. And because that seemed such like a cool way to introduce, they wanted to do a Japanese culture, we were able to find, due to my colleague at the library, a gentleman who makes sushi in our community, and he will be demonstrating how to make sushi, and while he's doing that, talk about the history, where they think it came from, techniques, all that sort of thing, and then you'll get to taste non-fish sushi when he's during the program. And then last lineup is at 2 p.m. Our person from the Friends of the Library introduced me to Matt, who does safaris in Africa. He's got his own company. He's living here now and still doing his company. And he's going to share about the Maasai, which is an indigenous tribe that lives at one with nature, still to this day, very connected to the land. And he's going to share about that culture and about the wildlife, wild game, and the landscape, etc., in Africa, in certain areas. And so it'll be a wonderful opportunity for us to get a window into other cultures, other places around the world. So I encourage everybody to come. And if you have any questions, 208-263-6930, extension 1103. And you can, or go on our website, ebonnerlibrary.org, events, and that will get you to more details.
There's even more things that are going on that you can find out on the website.
That is true. And one more I'm going to throw out there because it's on a different day than we're used to. March 6th, next Thursday. Anybody's interested in starting a home orchard with heritage varieties? Kyle from the Agricultural Organic Center is going to be doing that. And one of the cool things feeds into what Vanessa was talking about of trying to make things accessible to everybody. We're also going to make it available through Zoom. So you can either go to Clark Fork and join the Zoom room there with your other people in the community, come in person at the standpoint, or Zoom from your home to learn about how to do site assessments, soil evaluations, you know, all sorts of recommendations and considerations for starting a home orchard. Mm-hmm. And so that's different. We haven't had that before, and that's this Thursday. No, not tomorrow. Next Thursday. Sorry, I can't believe we're already in March.
Yeah.
Wow. So, and also, of course, don't forget the open mic this Saturday, guys. And there's many more. We've got sewing. We've got all sorts of things going on, all in line with that mission of our library, which is...
Yes, I love it.
The mission of the East Bonner County Library District is to provide access to opportunities for discovery, connection, and lifelong learning. And that is... It is a thread throughout all of our programming, throughout all our services, throughout all of our opportunities, as well as the strategic plan that we've spoken about today.
How do you keep the staff on board? Because it's so easy in the busyness of your life to continue to remember what your what your mission is, and really finding the support to facilitate that.
Yeah. Well, I think a large part of that is, I think, one of the priorities that we talked about, which is supporting staff and just making it a nice place to work in general, really helps. But generally, people who want to work at a library are pretty community oriented, and so already kind of come in with that mindset. And something that we've noticed helps is allowing staff, if they show interest in a particular program or service or initiative, actually providing the opportunity for them to help with that. So the sewing program is entirely staff run, I believe, at this point. And this was a community initiated program in the sense that a couple of community members just asked us for sewing classes, and we have some skilled sewers on staff. So we literally just pulled from our existing staff base and, you know, staff enough to allow them to work with these programs instead of their regular thing, which would just be, you know, manning the circulation or information desks or shelving
Take
or whatever it might
teach,
be. Right? Yeah, and do something and create those community connections that we're always trying to foster.
Mm-hmm. So you support them during their work time to possibly provide one of these classes.
Yes,
with
exactly.
their expertise.
Right. Yeah. And the very next one will be on March 15th, make a messenger bag. And, you know, that's we have sewing machines. And then also we've even added one to the Library of Things.
The Lending Library?
Yeah, the Library of Things. So, you know, you mentioned those planetary episodes that might be coming. So if it's not already checked out, you might want to come to the library and check out the telescope.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that'll help you see it. I'm not. I don't know astronomy, but we'll see.
Yeah, so that would be a great start.
And there's also a little birding kit that has binoculars. I don't know. Will they be strong enough, Chris?
Yeah, actually, the binoculars would help you with a couple of those planets.
So we got two ways to help you out there.
And do you have musical instruments in the lending?
There's guitar. Uh-huh. And we also have electronic drawing things. We have the telehealth. So if anybody out there is wanting to use telehealth services, we have a kit for that to enable that to happen. So there's lots of really cool things that, once again, bringing opportunity. And speaking of opportunity to your doorstep, the bookmobile that I think was mentioned earlier has a new stop at the Rusty Trunk in Pondere, and that's right next to the Spot Bus bus stop. Sorry, the word
Spot Stop.
Yeah, right, the Spot Stop. So, you know, once again, increasing accessibility, people can access. And I think, is Wi-Fi now available on the bookmobile, or soon to be, hopefully? Or is that?
Honestly, I'm not sure.
Okay. That might have been part of that challenge, but that she spoke of earlier, but hopefully maybe in the future.
Okay. Well, we are almost out of time. want to squeeze in one more question slash comment. You have two seats coming up for election in the the library board.
Yep, that's in May. The filing deadline for candidacy is, I believe, March 21st, whatever that third Friday is.
Two or 3 weeks out, but and the election will be in May.
Yeah, the election's May, the usual time. What is the second Tuesday?
Third Tuesday. Anyways, that information will be out there.
Yeah, we have the forms. If you want to declare candidacy for that position, there are forms at the library and at the county clerk's office.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, there's that final shout out. I want to say thank you to you, Vanessa Velez, and Joyce Jowdy, both of you from the East Bonner Library